Hey everyone, welcome back to yet another episode of Building It Up with Bertelsmann, India's first podcast that focuses on the growth stories of Indian startups. I'm your host Ankur Variku, and with me today is the founder of a product that I passionately love, and I'm so glad to have him on the episode today, Nitin Kamath. Nitin is the founder and CEO of Zerodha, India's largest stock trading platform, and it's phenomenal what they have achieved in such a short period of time. And they've done it with no institutional capital raised. So today's journey and conversation is centered around how do you build such a large product in what is, I would call, a commoditized space with virtually no money ever raised. It's a fascinating journey, and I'm supremely eager to hear Nitin's story.
Thank you so much, Nitin, for joining us. No, it's a pleasure to have you on Building It Up with Bertelsmann. I want to go back to the fact that trading has, you almost grown up on trading. When I was reading about you, you've been an active trader, you're doing it with your own money, then you started doing it with HNIs. So it almost feels like something like Zerodha would have been a natural progression, but I don't want to assume. What got you into trading in the first place?
I mean, trading was about quick money, right? Like, a lot of people, I think, get attracted to stock markets for, you know, the lure of easy money.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, doing this for 25 years, I think it's the toughest place to make easy money. You know, totally. It just seems easy, right? I think it seems easy because it's very easy to get started, you know, unlike, you know, real businesses, which take a lot of doing before you can actually start.
Correct.
Now, you could open a trading demat account and start your trading business almost instantly today, right? So yeah, I got hooked onto it because a bunch of older friends of mine, you know, they were trading, and then they introduced me to it. And it was all with 400, 500 rupees, and, you know, it was really small when I started. And then yeah, I've spent, 13 years before Zerodha actively trading markets.
Wow.
So when Zerodha happened, you know, it just seemed like a right time to be a broker that me and, you know, a bunch of us who used to trade together, you know, we didn't have as traders ourselves.
You
know? So this wasn't something thought over a coffee shop. You know, this was
like 13 years in the running.
Right.
And was it the frustration of the current tools that you experienced that made you think of an alternative, or was it just about, I've been doing this, so I can do it better than someone else?
Actually, there were two, three reasons. Firstly, you know, day trading is almost like playing a T20 game every day, right? It's really volatile, and, you know, you hit the shelf life of sorts. And I could feel a little bit of burnout. So I wanted to take a break from trading for a couple of years, like 1-2 years, and do something related to the industry. Second thing was, as a trader, you know, we were paying a lot of brokerage, right?
Yeah.
You know, India was one of the last few countries where we were still charging a percentage fees as brokerage. You know, in an online world, the cost of execution doesn't go with the size of trade. Right? So then why should the broker make more, right? I mean, it was like just logical. And it was not like something that we thought about at first. It was very common in the US.
Right?
The flat fee per trade, like this whole discount broking started in the US back in the 90s.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then the third thing was, we had made a little bit of money in 2008 when the markets fell. So, you know, to become a broker in India, you had to put deposits at the exchanges.
Yes.
Right. So, So, you know, all of those facilitators, you know, kind of enabled this whole idea of Zerodha, you know, back in 2010. And, you know, when you're a broker, there are two important things, right?
Yeah.
One is your technology, right? You need a trading platform, and you need operations, right?
Yeah.
And people to help you build the business. And technology is actually the toughest piece.
Yeah.
And back in 2009, the National Stock Exchange in India launched a platform called NSE Now, which they gave free of cost to brokers. So when we started, you know, it was more like a technology arbitrage of sorts. So where, you know, I had spotted that, you know, by being a member of the exchange, you get a platform for free. So then we were like, you know, if you get platform for free, can you disrupt pricing by taking your operations online?
Interesting.
Right? So this whole product play of ours was 2014 onwards. The first 3-4 years of a business was all built around the NSE Now trading platform, which was a vendor platform.
Yeah.
So, and with no one on our technology team, you know. So that's essentially how the business started.
Wow, that's a fascinating thing. And it's usually the advice is do not enter into low margin, super competitive cohorts.
Right.
And that's exactly where you went. It was crazy.
Right.
And you were up against really established players, like the people who were trading platforms back then were either well-institutionalized or well-funded or had been in the business for a really long time. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, that they were not necessarily the best experience. So you knew very well what you were getting into and were up against. And yet you chose that. Was it more like irrational optimism or did you really know that this is going to pan out because consumers were constantly saying we don't have a choice and we wish we had?
No, Sid, just to add on to all of this, right, 2010 was the worst year for broking industry ever.
Okay.
That's when we started.
Wow.
Right, so, you know, like, I think there is a very thin line between passion and foolishness, right? If it works out, people call you passionate. If it doesn't, they call you foolish. I mean, I think us starting a brokerage firm in 2010 with no pedigree background, with nothing at all, was quite foolish, you know. But then, but I think the edge was, you know, we got lucky, to be very honest. The luckiness was that in 2010 we started, most brokers were diversifying. Their focus was moving away from retail broking to doing other things. And we were kind of entering. And the first 2-3 years of the business, no one really acknowledged this pricing model, right? So we actually got a 3-year head start before the first competitor, who again was a small startup like us, who came in and said, okay, you know, this pricing maybe, you know, this kind of a model works. Sure. Be digital, be online, you know, be low cost, flat fee, etc. The big guys only last year, right, reduced the prices, right? So we have actually gotten a 7-8 year head start, right, in, you know, as in being able to build a moat around products and et cetera. And so, you know, a lot of people give credit to pricing today, but pricing is what was our edge when we started. And when we started the business, we were not building for investors. We were building it for active day traders and active futures and options traders, right? But as we grew that business, we realized that that market is a really shallow market. Like, you know, if you were to ask me in 2009, there was no way to do market research as well, right? As in, so I'd assume that there are quite a few F&O traders, right? But today, in reality, there are probably 300,000, 400,000 futures and options traders in the country, right? So you can't build a business just for 300,000, 400,000 users, right? So, and also in futures and options, you know, the problem is in the mortality rates are high. You know, people, you know, as soon as they lose some money, they become inactive and all of that, you know? So, so as we kind of spend some time building business for active traders, we realize that you know, that's not a big enough market, right?
And no, you're India's largest broking firm today. You know? Right. Like, that is unprecedented. Like, it's just disrupting someone like an ICICI Direct, and of course, doing it bootstrapped, doing it clinically so well. That's unreal. It's just absolutely. And you've done it without raising money. You've done it bootstrapped. You're profitable, and you also don't believe in advertising.
Right.
So almost all of your growth has come by virtue of you doing a great job with it.
Right.
Was again this a conscious call? Like, let's focus on funding because it's just fashionable to raise money. Right? You started a business and like, it's my birthright now to raise money. But you stayed away from it.
Right.
Was it because you were cornered into that or because people were like, no, what are you doing and we don't want to fund it? Or was it like, no, we don't
want to? No, I think the first 2 years, 1-2 years was by force. You know, it wasn't really an option.
Right.
Because I don't think, you know, anyone understood broking industry. I don't think even today people understand broking industry. Because VCs haven't invested into Indian broking firms yet. You know, I mean, only recently, last 1 year maybe. Right? So, and also I think, as I said, you know, it was a really horrible time for the industry itself. So, you know, and we were building a, you know, a platform on top of a vendor product. You know, there was no tech as well. So I don't think, you know, we were investable. If I was a VC, I wouldn't have invested in a company like that. You know, so, but I think, but by that, you know, by the time we realized it's a real business, we had actually started making some money as a business. From the 3rd year onwards is when, you know, VCs said, you know, boss, you can take some money. But then, you know, we were making money and I didn't really see a point of raising money.
Great.
Right? Because, see, the thing is, this whole trading and investing, right? You can, you know, you don't get up one day morning and say, I want to trade and invest. Right? I mean, you will probably get up one day and say, I want to buy a phone. You go Discover and you purchase something. But trading and investing is a very, you know, you get influenced to do it through a peer, most likely, right?
Yeah.
As in every person who's traded, invested, you ask that person, how did he start? He'll say, a friend introduced me to it, right? And this is not something that you're going to discover online. And Because what regulators do is that they don't allow you to sell greed.
Yes.
Right? So any advertisement can only say my platform is great and my product is great. No one can say come invest, make 30%.
Correct.
If someone could advertise saying come invest, make 30% in a market,
that would get
people. Of course, that would greed is, you know, would work for sure, right? But funding, as I said, because we never advertised, funding was never required, and we grew slowly. I mean, the thing is, what I realized is by not having professional investors, we were never pushed to, you know, grow fast. And so we grew at our speed. You know, we did what we thought is the right thing for the trader, what is the right thing for our customer. And we have never built a product keeping revenue in mind or how many new clients we'll get in mind. You know, everything that we built is, you know, our clients enjoy it. It's going to help them in some form. And so it's been slow organic growth. So that way, you know, we never spend, forget about fundraise from outside. We have never taken a single loan, you know, from a bank, you know, right? So it's, so I think it, you know, it helps you to sleep well in the night, you know, and it keeps you very nimble on your feet as well.
True.
As a business. Right?
I love that. You know? I love that. The other interesting piece in a conversation before we started this podcast was you're also catering to this massive first-time traders community,
right,
which I would imagine would comprise a lot of your client base, and they need hand holding because for them this is not natural finance as it is scares people, and then it's stocks, and we have this notion of stocks being all dupey and take money out you always end up losing money. We equate stock trading to gambling for some reason, and I'd imagine that would have been a strong attention focus for you when you were growing up. Walk us through that, like how did you think about that? It clearly cannot be 100% online. So how did you navigate through the offline online combination?
I mean, see, the biggest tipping point for the industry, for the business, was actually Demon, you know, right? Because for us, onboarding a customer was a 40-page document and I don't know how many signatures and all of that, right? And even though Aadhaar was in use before Demon, but actually people started using Aadhaar only after demonetization,
true,
right? And so different use cases of Aadhaar started opening up, and this whole e-signature using Aadhaar, e-KYC using Aadhaar, etc. Right. So after Demon was the first time we could actually onboard a customer online digitally,
nice,
right? And so that was like a really big, change. I mean, I think the first 5 years of the business, we had opened 70,000 accounts. The January after Demon, 2018 January, we opened 80,000 accounts a month. You know, so it was like a huge relief, you know, for the business. Yeah, but what we realized, you know, the first one, 2 years of the business was, business started off thinking that we're going to remain online, digital. But it kind of hit on us quite soon that in the business of money, people want to know if there are as humans behind it.
Correct.
So one of those hacks we did, which worked very well, was we set up sales centers in all the cities, actually.
Offline sales centers?
So we have today in the top 20 cities, we have our sales team sit out of, you know, small office share setups.
Wow.
And, you know, so we have a location on our map, contact us, we have a local landline number to reach out to.
Got it.
And then we, you know, in the smaller cities, we do it through our partners.
Hmm.
And every time we go to a city, we do a press conference saying, "Oh, we are in the city," and, you know, let people know. You know, it was just building credibility. So even though we started the business thinking that, you know, we can be completely digital, it kind of very quickly hit on us that when it comes to money, people want to speak to someone, right? Like people in our office. You know, I was just looking at it the other day. You know, so they were all trying to buy insurance. They're spending time everywhere on all the insurance comparison website. But before buying a policy, they wanted to speak to someone, right? Just to like, you know, I mean, they already decided. Just want a confirmation that was your real, you know? As in, so I think it's about savings, investing is a lot about that, right? And I think a big problem in India is, I mean, probably around the world actually, is no one's educated on finance, you know, in school, colleges, right? And so by the time you get your first paycheck, you are ending up either following your parents' habits or your peers, right? And you can safely assume that it's probably a wrong habit,
right?
And, you know, buying gold jewelry or, you know, buying real estate
without,
and all of that, right? As in, without really having enough, and you know, without proper financial planning and etc. Right. So we realized that we had to put people to kind of, even though the entire user experience is quite minimalistic, but it can still be intimidating for a first timer. Yeah. Right. So these decisions that we took has helped us quite a bit. You know.
The other piece, Nitin, about your business is that it's regulated to some extent, like, because at the end of it, it's people's money and there is some controller of that interest. So there will be bound days where things don't go as per plan, and there are enough of them every now and then. How does a business tend to recover? And I want to focus on the credibility issue that you spoke about, which is fascinating. I love your thesis on it. But how do you get out of that credibility damage of sorts?
From the start of the business, everything that we have done has been on the right side of the regulation.
Okay.
Right. So we've always done what regulators expect out of broking industry. And today, if you were to go speak to regulators, they would probably have great words for us because we are kind of forcing the incumbents to be transparent, be technology first, don't do advisory. Because the biggest complaints that regulators get today in India is unauthorized trading, right? Which is essentially advisors inducing customers to trade, and et cetera, right? So we are kind of, we've always been doing what is right for the industry, right for the customer. So that way, you know, there's never been an issue from the regulators. The issue, though, is from on the technology side, right? As in, you know, we've had scaling issues because post 2016, you know, we've gone from 50,000, say, to 1.6 million customers, from, say, 200,000, 300,000 trades to 3, 4 million trades a day, right? And in our business, we rely on multiple, multiple businesses to run our business, you know. So, for example, in India, all orders have to go to the exchanges. That means you have to connect to the exchange via lease lines, right? And these are in Bombay, and you know, so if someone is there's someone digging for metro, your lease line can potentially get affected. I mean, of course, there are backups, right? But then the issue with with the backup to backup is if something goes down, primary goes down, it takes time for the secondary to come up. Right? And also the issue in this business is that when an order is fired through one line, and if, say, this goes down and we move him to the other, we have to reconcile the status of this order already placed. Which right? So, I mean, you can do it with 10, 1500, but if you have a million open orders, right, reconciling takes time. Right? So, even though everything today is built in-house, there's a core piece of technology which we use, Thomson Reuters, now Refinitiv's technology, which is called as an order management system, risk management system, which is that engine maintains the status of orders at the exchanges and also manages the risk of orders being going through. You know? I mean, this is a very, you know, it's a really, what do you call it? It's a 5-year technology building problem, you know, in the sense. This is almost like building an engine for a car, you know, like how Porsche uses Audi engine. Right, so you know, why doesn't Porsche build their own engines? Right, as in, so it's like that, right? So we use them. So we kind of end up relying on their technologies and their scale. Right, so these are all like you know, these are all things that can potentially affect us.
Yeah. One question that I want to focus on is you're profitable. You've taken your time to grow, and it's been a conscious choice, and you've done remarkably well on that. Does it worry you that someone with irrational funding can come and destroy it, particularly because it's a discount broking platform, and then price becomes a commodity? While to your credit, you've built moats around this. Yeah. So the question is, does that give you the confidence that you'll be able to uphold your territory, or is it that something that money can buy?
No, I think, see, the thing is, like I said, this is a very complex complex product to build. I don't think there's something, you know, it's, so if we had raised money, could we have built something faster? Actually, the answer is no. Right? So I don't think the product cycles would have been faster. If we had raised money, had a lot more people, we would have probably been slower and not faster, right? So if someone's trying to compete in terms of product build, you know, I don't think it's going to happen fast just because there are deeper pockets, right? But what could a competitor do with deep pockets? I mean, it could potentially advertise, do cashbacks, open accounts, and et cetera. I mean, so we might take a hit in new account openings, right? Sure. But then that's never really been a great metric, right? As in, because new account openings, which are inactive, is of no use anyways, right? So Now, people who have intent to invest or trade, and once they understand how investing and trading works, and they're speaking to friends and family who are trading and investing, they will slowly, come towards the best product.
True.
Right? And we're already at zero. It's not like, on the investing side, it's not like we are an incumbent who's charging a lot of brokers.
Okay.
Right? For active traders, we charge $20 a trade, right? As in, can that reduce? Potentially, that could be in pressure, right? Because if someone comes and says, I want to compete here. But the thing is about active trader is, it's like if you're a supercar racer, right? And your living is by racing cars, you care for what's the quality of your car.
Correct.
Right? You wouldn't compromise on your car because you know that this is what is that you used to race, right? So the active traders side, they care for the platform on which they trade. Yeah. And all the features, all the tools, how fast, and all of that. So yeah, so a competitor can come today, take 3-4 years, 5 years, go through a cycle of learning, build a product, and then maybe the deeper pockets would work. But hopefully by then we would have evolved our products.
Of course, so. Makes sense. What keeps you up at night as a founder CEO of such an accomplished company now?
Well, I mean, I think like, I'm always thinking about how to grow the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's just crazy how shallow the markets in India are. So last year we had 4 to 5 million Indians who invested once a year, right? And I mean, I understand most Indians don't have money, but even those 4-5 crore income tax filing Indians, should probably be investing, right? I mean, some portion of it. Because I think, as a country, we rely too much on foreign capital. And I think, one of those things for me to do in life, I think, has been that how do we get Indians to back Indian entrepreneurs, right? As in, because I think for a country like ours to become, a global superpower, I think that has to happen, right? People should stop putting money in gold real estate. Put money behind some entrepreneurs. And then it's just a cycle. More jobs are going to get created. It's going to help the country and all of that. So we want to be catalysts in some form to, enable all of that.
Great. Awesome. So on that note, thank you so much, Vijay, for being a part of this. This is lovely.
Thanks.
All the best with everything. I'm sure there's a wonderful future ahead of Zerodha. And with you at the helm of it and your passion, I'm sure it's going to happen.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And with that, we come to the end of yet another episode of Building It Up with Bertelsmann, India's first growth-focused podcast. I'm your host, Ankur Variku. And until next episode, do not forget to subscribe on iTunes, Savan, SoundCloud, and also check out a video on YouTube and Facebook. Until next episode, I'll see you all.